Because in a family, you're stuck with each other.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Bible Geeks Weekly Podcast. This is episode 39. I'm Brian Sheely.
I'm Ryan Choi.
And thanks so much, everyone, for tuning in. Today, we are going to be talking about bridging the generational gap. It's been on my mind for a while. We're going to get into talking about that this episode. But before we do, we have a Jesus Said segment, and you've got a verse for me this week?
I do. We're going to jump right into the middle of one of Jesus' most beautiful prayers. Sometimes it's called his high priestly prayer in John 17, and we'll start in verse 10. So here the Lord is nearing his time on the cross, and he says, "All mine are yours, and yours are mine, and I am glorified in them. I am no longer in the world, but they are in the world, and I am coming to you. Holy Father, keep them in your name, which you have given me, that they may be one even as we are one. While I was with them, I kept them in your name, which you have given me. I have guarded them, and not one of them has been lost except the son of destruction, that the scripture might be fulfilled. But now I am coming to you, and these things I speak in the world, that they may have my joy fulfilled in themselves. I have given them your word, and the world has hated them, because they're not of the world, just as I am not of the world. I do not ask that you take them out of the world, but that you keep them from the evil one. They are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Sanctify them in the truth. Your word is truth. As you sent me into the world, so I have sent them into the world, and for their sake I consecrate myself, that they also may be sanctified in truth. I do not ask for these only, but also for those who will believe in me through their word, that they may all be one, just as you, Father, are in me, and I in you, that they also may be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me." So what do you think?
I knew you were going to use this verse. If I had to guess which verse you were going to use for this, Jesus Said, this would have been the one, and I'm glad you picked it.
Yeah, why be clever when there's the perfect choice sitting right there?
This is just a great prayer, and the thing that jumps out at me is his prayer for unity, that they may all be one, just as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they also may be in us, so the world may believe that you have sent me. This connection between Jesus and God and how they're united, and Jesus, by extension, wants us to be united, not only with each other, but most especially with God and with Christ himself. And that unity, that connection, it's like a family relationship and this bond that we have. And if you could pray for anything, that would probably be the most important thing that you could pray for, this kind of unity.
Yeah, unity with God and with one another as he is. I mean, this is, yeah, being called into that same kind of Trinitarian fellowship that God and Jesus and the Spirit has. I mean, that's so beautiful. And it's so cool that Jesus, when he was here on the earth right before his time in his trial and his crucifixion, was praying specifically for you and me.
Yeah, that's another good one. I love that part.
That's really cool. For those who will believe in me through their word. And he's thinking forward to us. And he knew that there would be all kinds of things that would bring up division and conflict and difficulty, not just in the world, but within his people, those who believe in him through the apostles' words. And that was on his heart. That was weighing on him as he prepared for the hardest moments of his life.
And the fact that he does point out here that we are not going to be loved by the world.
Mm-hmm.
And verse 14, "I have given them your word, and the world has hated them because they are not of this world, just as I am not of this world." Jesus was going to very quickly after this experience one of the most outrageous acts of hatred against himself. And you can only imagine what the apostles must be thinking as they think back to this prayer, how Jesus was hated to the point where he was put on the cross. And we are going to be hated in the same way by the world, and all the more reason for us to unite with each other. We don't find comfort. We don't find unity. We don't find this family kind of relationship with the world. We find it with God's people. And so when we're being attacked, when we're being pressed on every side and hated by the world, where do we go? Well, we go to the family of God. We go to these close bonds, this close relationship that we have with each other. And I think that's why Jesus rolls right into praying about unity after really saying, nobody is going to appreciate you in this world. So bind together.
It's interesting. He talks about two different responses from the world. And so we find in it why the world hates us, but also what leads the world to believe. And he says, they have my word. And so the world hates them because they're not like them. They're not of them. But then he says, because we're one, whenever we are one, then the world may believe that you have sent me, that they may all be one. Verse 21, just as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they may be in us so that the world may believe that you have sent me.
Sure.
So the world sees unity in the Lord's people and they believe. Well, what do they think whenever they don't see unity? Well, that leads to a dismissal of the whole message, because that's kind of the point, is a love. You know, he says elsewhere in John 13 that they'll know you're my disciples because you love one another.
And that is the special nature of the church. Each of us has a connection with Jesus as a special possession of his. And if I'm a special possession of Jesus's, and you're a special possession of Jesus's, and all the rest of my brothers and my sisters within the church are special possessions of Jesus, well, then that leads us to bind closer together. And seeing ourselves that way, I think, really clarifies our treatment of each other, how we interact with each other. We're much more willing, when we remember this fact, to have patience with each other, knowing that we are all special in the sight of God. And if we forget that, I think it's real easy for us just to judge each other and treat each other harshly, maybe, because if you look at the diverse nature of the church, what other reason would we have, from all of our various backgrounds, from all of our various contexts of our lives, what other reason would we have to be united if not having been special in the sight of God and loved by him?
Yeah, it's easy to focus on the differences between us. And the Bible emphasizes, you look at a passage like Ephesians 4, it emphasizes how we deal with what we have in common and how we deal with how we're different. And it talks about value your diversity, these different gifts that were given, spoken of elsewhere, Romans 12, etc. Value that, because those are gifts from God so that the body may be complete. But focus on what you have in common as you build your relationship with each other, because that's the most important stuff, that fellowship, that sharing of Christ, that we have one body, one baptism, one hope. The things that are most important to me are most important to my brother, my sister, whether they're 11 years old or 100 years old, whatever differences we have, we can contribute to one another from those differences. But the main important thing is that commonality.
So on this topic of unity, recently in the news, there's been a lot of discussion about the generational gap within the church. There was a Pew Research study that we'll throw in the show notes, basically talking about how the upcoming generation, maybe the generation of millennials these days, are more frequently identifying as non-religious. But I don't think it comes as a surprise. I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, I had a peer group within the church of quite a number of young people, quite a number of people my age. And I can maybe count on one hand the number of those people that I can think of who are still faithful to the Lord.
It's probably 50-50 in my thinking, and maybe that's generous as I think about the people who I went to Bible classes with, the people who I considered my closest friends, brothers, and sisters in the Lord. There's really been a scattering. I recently talked to a group of about 50 young Christians, teenagers, and I shared with them some of those thoughts, some of the statistics, and the realization that just looking at the statistics alone, you're not going to see a lot of the people that are around you right now with you in heaven if we just went by the statistics. So how do we change that? Mm-hmm. I mean, what a devastating thought. What a reality check. I think of the book of Hebrews and the reality check that the writer is trying to get across to this generation of Jewish Christians that he's talking to that are slipping away, just falling right and left and not anchored in the Lord. And how do we anchor one another? How do we anchor ourselves? And then how do we build that web of connections between generations, between all of God's people? The more connections you have, the more of a safety net you have, the more your identity is found in Christ and in his people, rather than disappearing into just the homogeny of the world, just being like everything that's out there. And that's what slowly can happen whenever we're constantly immersed in another way of being, as Jesus talked about. They're in the world, the evil one is going to try to come at them, and the world's going to hate them, and it's going to be so easy for my people to not be sanctified. And so, yeah, I mean, this is an issue that you and I have lived through ups and downs with friends and ourselves. And now I guess we're starting to be kind of an older generation or a middle generation as younger millennials and Gen Z comes up. And then there's this older generation that I think also can start to feel like outsiders, as what younger people in the church are talking about might sound different. How do we listen to their wisdom? How do we have a confidence, a trust in one another? Love believes all things. Love hopes all things. 1 Corinthians 13, to where we can hear each other and see one another valuing the words of Christ, that we all honor Jesus' authority, but people are coming at it from different perspectives, and we all have things to learn from one another, even the older folks from the younger folks.
I think that's probably one of the big challenges of today in bridging that generational gap, that listening has to be there, has to be something that we put a priority on, and being interested in each other and not coming at it from a place of judgment or being critical. Mm-hmm. I think on both sides of it, you can see the younger generation maybe being critical and judgmental of the older, maybe because they're not, quote unquote, moving fast enough. And maybe on the other side, the older generation looking at the younger, thinking that, like you said, well, they don't think about things the same way I did. And we have a lot to learn from each other. And in that picture of the body that you talked about from Ephesians, we all have a function, we all have a role, and every one of us brings something to the table in our diversity. And I think that includes the younger generation providing something for the church that maybe the older generation isn't, and the older generation providing something to the church that the younger generation isn't.
Yeah, you think of a family. That's the way Paul talks about it at the first couple of verses of 1 Timothy 5, and treat the older women like mothers and older men like fathers. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't want more fathers, more mothers? Treat the younger like younger brothers and younger sisters. Who doesn't want more of those? And who doesn't see the contribution? Like in our family, even the babies have their contribution. They might take a little more sometimes than some of the others in the family, but everyone is contributing. Everyone has a part. Everyone is valued and served and serving. And I've learned so much from being blessed with best friends that are 20, 30 years older than me, and best friends that are 20, 30 years younger than me. I mean, years ago, whenever we were younger, I was early 20s and you were early teens, I guess, or mid-teens, I don't know. What are we, 5 years different?
Oh, yeah.
Whenever we got those two groups together, the early 20-somethings and the teens all the way down to maybe junior high together so that you could kind of form relationships where the younger can kind of see something in the older. But then over time, what happens is the ages smooth out so that those differences don't mean as much. And then you're just left with a bunch of friendships.
Yeah.
That's the gift of the church.
I think maybe sometimes we get into this mindset that my faith is my faith and my walk with God is my walk with God. And it's my personal responsibility. We talk about that a lot. Personal responsibility. It's my personal responsibility to make sure I'm doing what's right. Well, then why do we need the church if it's just all up to us individually? Why would Jesus have prayed for unity there in John 17 within the church if it was just everyone's personal responsibility? And you can't look very long in the New Testament and all of the writings of the apostles without seeing our responsibility to each other. And when I remember that, then it's not just about me. It's not just about my faith. It's not just about working out my salvation with fear and trembling. It's about looking out for other people. And that includes people who are younger than me. That includes people who are older than me. And I need to remember that as I think about how I walk through this world. It's not just all about me.
Yeah, I always think about how Galatians 6:5 says each one will have to bear his own load. And that's the what you were talking about, personal responsibility. A few verses earlier, verse 2, bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. Those are not contradictory statements. There's two different kinds of loads. You're going to answer for what you do, but until that day, I'm going to do everything I can to try to share your load. And I read an article years ago by Philip Yancey. It was about whenever you grow up being part of a small local congregation, there's a different dynamic to the relationships that starts to happen. And it's more like a family. Because in a family, you're stuck with each other. You know, if there's a church of 5,000 people, you can go to your group of youth or your group of 30-something single people or your group of whatever, people who love the Arizona Cardinals and that's their favorite thing in the world, you know, whatever it is. And you just talk to those people most of the time, and you just have so much in common, and it's great to have things in common with people. But again, the most important things in your life are the things you have in common with everyone who follows Jesus. And whenever you're in a small group, a small church, what starts to happen is that person that on the surface looks like you have nothing in common with because they grew up in the Depression era, and they have a very different view of whatever, certain political issues than you, certain, you know, whatever, different things than you, you start to realize this relationship is something I need to treasure because our differences and our commonality in that combination, there's really a gift to be found. And it gets complicated and you have to work with things because this one speaks a different way than you speak and it really challenges how you listen or whatever. But that's the gift. Those are the gifts that Christ gave. The gifts, whenever Paul talks about gifts in the New Testament, the gifts are not the things we have in common. The gifts are about what we have that's different. And so that I might have a blind spot in my perspective on something, but someone that's 15 sees it differently and can help me see it, or someone that's 75. And so, yeah, that is worth working through, just like a family has to work through no matter what happens, no matter how much they annoy you, you know, no matter how much Asher annoys Anna and vice versa, my son and daughter. They're stuck with each other. They're going to be laying down in a bed close to each other that night. They're going to be sitting next to each other on a road trip for 8 hours. It's going to happen. So work it out.
The tendency is to look for a place, to look for a church, maybe if you're moving or maybe you're looking for somewhere else to go for whatever reason, to look for a place that has the same group of people that you currently exist in. I can't tell you how many times here at Monta Vista, we get people reaching out, looking to move to the area, asking about How many young people do we have? Do you have a group of singles there? These kinds of categories of people that they're looking to join together with often is the same category of people that they are currently in. And that's the natural thing that we want to do. We want to join together with a group that is very similar to us, or that we can connect with without a whole lot of extra work. But I think you can go anywhere and find, because of our common faith, a way to unite with each other, a way to become a part of that work, even if you're the only young person there, even if you're the only old person there. I mean, there's a connection there that we have that goes beyond physical stuff, that goes beyond age, that goes beyond nationality, that goes beyond our political affiliations, that goes beyond all of that. And if we're just looking for the easy connection, then maybe we're missing the opportunities to make deeper connections and fit into the work in more meaningful ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, what you want to look for is, the Bible word is sound.
Healthy.
Healthy. What you want to look for is a healthy church, whole. And that doesn't mean a perfect church, but one that is being constantly healed and made more healthy by healthy teaching and working towards healthier and healthier relationships. One that looks like the New Testament church in all its messiness, following and submitting to the apostles' teaching. Because, as Jesus said, those who believe in their word are going to be able to be made one in him.
I don't know, maybe from a practical perspective, if you think about the way that sometimes churches, congregations will try to address different age groups, I think sometimes there's this tendency to isolate groups of people into certain categories. So we'll have a class geared toward young girls, and we'll have a class geared toward young men, and maybe we'll have a deeper study with the older women and the older men, or the older people altogether, or the younger people altogether. You know, we'll kind of separate or cordon off these groups into these boundaries of their age, maybe, or their gender. And I don't think that's bad. Just to be clear, I think that anytime we get together and have an opportunity to study, it's a good thing. But there's an opportunity there maybe that's being missed for the older generation to open up to the younger generation.
Yeah.
Or for the younger generation to open up and share their struggles and what they currently need with the older generation. And when we isolate ourselves by age group or by gender like that, we may very easily miss how we can be of service to someone else of a very different category than us.
Yeah, whenever we moved here to Fort Wayne, we had these groups, these small groups that would come together on Sunday nights. And the coolest thing about it was you'd have a living room full of people, from little kids up to the older people in the congregation, and everybody for 35 minutes of just talking about some passage of scripture. Some of the more outgoing kids would have something to say, and it would just be so encouraging to everybody. And then there would be some wisdom and some perspective from somebody older, and you'd have all of these different groups speaking up, and just that family feeling and that sense of connectedness and that ability for everybody to feel like, I'm part of this. I'm part of this group. I'm part of something that we're all connected, and then to be able to be benefited by each other. It's really a gift.
I think it's a real challenge for us to really get to know each other when we're at worship. We're there for a purpose. We're there to worship God. Maybe there's time there for us to spend in the hallways before or after, talking to each other, getting to know each other. But I think a lot of it goes to the amount of time we spend outside of the building or of our assembly together. The Monday through Saturday kinds of connections that we make with each other, I think will go a huge long way in developing a greater familiarity with each other.
Yeah, I think we maybe at some point could do a whole episode on just the house-to-house aspect of the church and of Christianity, because I think besides spiritual development with some depth, really developing disciples, I believe that is the biggest need in the church. I mean, that's what I see in local churches, is that need to. We're all so busy and we're all so separated from each other. And if you do get together, you naturally are going to get together with your best friends. And that's not wrong. Jesus had best friends, it seems. Mm-hmm. But man, we need, like you say, to just find a way to mix it up and be together with everybody. The more of those connections across, cross-pollinating our different ways of thinking and different varieties in the church, it's critical. And I think that when that happens, then that trust can start to develop, that ability to kind of see one another in a more generous way and really appreciate and give some confidence and some space to each other. I think a lot of times in so many things, we end up managing things in the church and in our lives from a place of fear. It's just really easy for us to do because we're humans, and we get afraid of things that are in some ways right to be afraid of. Like, what if they, all of these people we love, fall away? How do we protect these young people? And then we try to control the situation. We move from influence to control, and we don't have confidence in them, but really, we don't have confidence sometimes. I'm speaking of myself as much as anyone, in the truth and in God and in the ability of the word to work in people. I'm talking this Sunday. One of the things I'm going to be talking about came from a conversation with a couple that is maybe 20 years younger than me and Adrian about one of the things that maybe we haven't done as good of a job as we should have in all of our Bible teaching. These are young people that have been in Bible classes all their lives, pointed out what I've never really been taught is how to study and how to, really what I was hearing is teaching critical thinking about spiritual things, teaching the ability to think about the truth and the difference between teaching and indoctrination. Mm-hmm. Indoctrination is we say, you need to believe this, you need to believe this, and we drill it into them. And we do that, Adrian and I, you know, with our little ones. But Anna is 7 now, and we're at the point where we're trying to, and Asher too, he's 6. We're trying to think with them now and get them thinking about the questions they ask, because they need to be able to start working it out for themselves as they grow into their adolescence and their teen years and start really questioning everything they've ever been told and saying, okay, I need to know this for myself. What do I really think about this? Because faith is very weak when it's just based on what you've been told you need to say you believe in order to be part of our fellowship. Whenever we say, no, this is what I actually think is true because I've thought about it and I've considered these things, that is faith. You will know the truth and the truth will set you free. Once you actually know what's true, that's what changes us.
Well, it's the teaching people to fish, right?
Yeah.
You could give someone a fish and they'll eat for a day, but you can teach them to fish and they'll eat for their lifetime. And with the younger generation, no matter how old you are, there's always someone coming up who has not been through it before. We just have to remember that just because we have worked through something or figured it out doesn't mean that the people coming up behind us have also done that. But I think being inquisitive and being open to entertaining questions about faith is a really good place to be, because it means people are interested. It means people are thinking about things, and those kinds of attitudes we need to have in the church, no matter what generation we are.
Test everything. Hold on to what's good. 1 Thessalonians 5:21.
Yeah. No, and the Bereans, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We have to foster that spirit of searching. We talk sometimes about restoration and the principles of searching the scriptures, like you say about the Bereans, and the principles of really not taking a human creed, but rather having a thus saith the Lord for what we do. Well, that is a generational handoff, one to one to one. think about the book of Judges and how a generation keeps coming up who doesn't know. This is where I feel like you and me, Brian, our generation now really needs to have a sense of the gauntlet being thrown down to us, because we are a bridge.
Sure.
You quoted earlier 1 Timothy and the idea of, you know, let no one despise your youth, but set an example. And I think we think of Timothy as like a 16-year-old or something because he's described as a young man, but more likely he was in his 30s. You know, this word for youth could describe anybody 40 or under in that culture. And by this time, he is still young compared to some people, but he's probably in those middle years. And Paul says, step up, say what needs to be said, be an example, start to learn to lead. And Timothy, I get the impression of some timidity in his personality. I don't know, that could just be me. And Paul is saying, don't let anything hold you back. Step up and do what you need to do. Be respectful to those who are older than you. I'm not telling you to think that you know it all. Absolutely not. But you need to take responsibility for God's church just as other people should take responsibility for it. But it is time for all of us to take responsibility and say, look, it's not perfect, but this is God's church.
Yeah.
And at some point I have to say, I am accountable for the difference I'm meant to make in this church. I have to say, if it's not what it should be in some area, then I'm not going to throw up my hands. I'm not going to withdraw and say, you know, what a bunch of hypocrites, or say, oh, they'll never change, or something like that. I mean, these are things I've heard over the years from some of those people that have fallen away that we've talked about. Rather, get in there and do the work.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Teddy Roosevelt quote that says, it is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor know defeat. And, you know, there's so much of what we do that is not governed by some specific command or example or principle from the Lord. It's just the way we do it, because that's the way we do it. And there's nothing wrong with doing things just the way we do things, but that's one of the places that I hear young people speaking up sometimes, is saying, this would be a better way to do it, and some idea of how we might change something. And if we're not willing to occasionally let them be part of the conversation, and in fact, I think we should generally be in conversation with one another and respect the authority of elders as they make decisions, but be in conversation about what is the most fruitful way for us to do things.
Yeah, it just comes down to listening still.
Yeah.
And being open. And I think even just outside of the church right now, I don't know if you've seen it, but there's a bunch of memes out there and a bunch of conversation out there about the younger generation basically looking at the baby boomers who have strong opinions or who maybe are dismissive to the problems going on with the younger generation. And the younger generation's response more often than not is, okay, boomer. That's what we see all over the internet right now, is just this dismissiveness from the older to the younger. And now the younger generation is tired of hearing from the older generation because they don't listen to them. And I don't think that can ever be the attitude within the church. If we just write off somebody who's younger because they're younger and they have no valid input, well, then eventually they're not going to want to be a part of the work anymore. And so, like what you're saying, is bringing them in and making them feel like a valuable part of what we're doing.
Yeah.
Is a way of keeping them engaged and a way of making them have skin in the game and have stake in what's going on.
My experience with organizations of all different kinds is that so much of the work that needs to be done is not in planning a project or solving a problem, the foundation, like 90% of the work is getting everyone on the same page and in the same conversation and with a sense that we're relating to each other, we're aligned in our commitment, we have the same vision, the same main goals. And once there's that foundation, it's like, man, we weren't accomplishing anything. All this time we were trying to build this foundation and have this sense of what our mission is and listening to each other. As soon as that's there, it's like a rocket launch pad that projects get done, breakdowns turn into breakthroughs, and people are working through issues. But it's taking that work. It's those house-to-house conversations. It's those small groups getting together. It's young people being willing to speak up and to listen. It's older people and elders being willing to share their thinking and to listen. Paul says in 2 Corinthians 1, when he's explaining why he wants to correct them and help them, he says, not that I wanted to lord it over you, but I want your joy to be made full. I'm not trying to be top down pushing you to do something. I'm trying to draw you in to this greater joy that the Lord has for us. I want you to see something and be part of something. It's a, you know, long before companies in the Silicon Valley started talking about squashing and flattening hierarchies, the Bible talks about it. The Bible talks about a bottom up leadership, a servant leadership rather than top down. And so, yeah, I mean, the dialogue is the whole thing of how people get changed. That's how Paul taught, is with dialogue. He went into synagogues and reasoned with people. And that's what we see Jesus doing, is thinking with people and challenging him. It's a skill for us to just keep practicing and keep learning how to really listen to each other, how to really have dialogue with each other.
If you really have to sum up this conversation, probably that's the great way to do it. How we need to be vulnerable and willing to listen and open to each other while still remaining firm on the things that need to be upheld strongly. And there's a balance there. There's a delicate balancing act that we go through when we do that. But we can't expect everyone to be at the same level we are. And if we're really honest with ourselves, we can't expect ourselves to be at the level where we should be all of the time. If we think we've got it all figured out and we have all the answers, well, we're probably missing something. And if we don't think we have anything to learn, well, then we're probably not looking very hard at what we actually know and what we actually believe. There's always something to learn.
Yeah. Are you saying we should be like non-Newtonian gooey slime? To reference your...
yesterday's daily?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right. So let's get into the challenge for this week. I think a good challenge would be to connect with someone from another age group other than your own this week. I think that's fairly easy to do. Maybe not easy, but it's something we need to do.
Absolutely. You'll be blessed by the effort.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning into the Bible Geeks podcast. You can find us on our website at BibleGeeks.fm. You can find show notes for this episode at BibleGeeks.fm/39. You can also follow along with our daily download series. That's at BibleGeeks.fm/daily. And please, if you will, follow along with us on social media. We are the Bible Geeks wherever you might find us. And until next week, everyone, may the Lord bless you and keep you.
Shalom.